This is the Wonder Health Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Ritter, and each Sunday I am so excited to talk to game changers, transformational leaders, and functional health and wellness experts who inspire us to light up our lives so that we can go out and light up this world. You may find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Wonder Health, and that is Wonder with a U. Wonder Health presents Gut Check Summit, the legit guide to how your gut health affects everything, April the 6th, 2019 in Fort Collins, Colorado. From now until February the 15th, take part in the early bird special of $169. You may register and learn more at wonderhealth.com, and that is Wonder with a U. Hello, it's Andrea Ritter with the Wonder Health Podcast, where you will meet wonderful, game-changing people and learn about transformational ways to improve your health. And today, we are really excited, me and my alter ego, apparently, because there's only one of me. I'm really excited to be here with Nicole Ekman with Enlightenment Nutrition, and she is all about enlightening people on how to be healthier. So welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So what, you know, I mean, there's so many approaches with nutrition. Mm-hmm. What is your approach to this crazy world of our body?
Yeah, it's really become pretty overwhelming as far as how much information is out there. So of course, like anything, it's the pros and cons of having an information overload, I think. My approach has always been really to listen to your body and try to get people to reconnect with their signals, you know, in the busy level of, you know, the level of busyness that we live in as our new normal. I think people are very disconnected from their bodies. So one of the main things I work with all my patients on is trying to listen and get back in touch. And so you start to trust a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know? People don't trust their bodies. A lot of the population that I draw for clients are really, you know, I call them the walking wounded. They're just really unwell. They're functioning in their life, but barely. And so they're very disconnected from, you know, why things are even happening to them a lot of times. And we try to really just bring them back to some of that innate intuitive sense of, you know, what do you need? What's working? What's not working? Don't just follow a diet because you saw it on the internet or your friend had good success with it, but follow it because it's working for you.
That's huge, because how many times, like, oh, my friend did this and she tells me about it. I just did that, honestly. And I'm like, oh, you lost 30 pounds? Mm-hmm. I can do that. My body, like, I probably actually sent myself into a state trying to do something like that. So that could be super debilitating. Mm-hmm. But you did just say, like, you are talking to people and trying to get them back to listening to themselves. How do you do that? Especially, you know, if we're in this place of not knowing what's going on with our bodies or being fearful or whatever, how do we get to the place of even listening?
Yeah. So, I think one of the things that I see with a lot of people consistently, especially women, is that, they've gotten away from trusting. And so one of the things that I always have them reflect back on is, you know, I'm giving you these few things to try with your diet or these supplements to shift or these lifestyle management pieces. And I want you to really keep track of that, you know? So I ask patients to kind of, reflect back on what works, what doesn't work. And I tell them to put it back on me. I need that information in order to help you with the next steps. So I have them really kind of take note of the big picture, not just food or just supplements or just, you know, stress management tools. It's like all of it together is really the whole story. You got a piece, you know, it's a big puzzle. And if you're missing a couple big pieces, it's not going to make a lot of sense. So bringing them back to keeping track in a sense of whether it's keeping a log. I mean, some people enjoy that and thrive on that. Other people hate doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have people just scribble down notes, you know, voice text themselves, voice text me, you know, really simple stuff that tries to get them to just start to reflect as they notice, oh, my symptoms are here today. What did I eat? What did I take? What did I do differently? What's my stress level like? You know, that kind of stuff.
So that's pretty easy. It's not like you need to sit and meditate, and not that we don't love meditation.
Right.
You know, like it doesn't have to be that deep. It can be as simple as make notes on what you're eating or mm-hmm. putting into your body, whatever mm-hmm. that is, and see how you feel.
Right. And there's ways to do it that are really more complex that some people thrive on, like where you can get into these different apps and really log every single thing and the portions and real specific. And yeah. some people, like I said, do really well with that. And other people, that is daunting and just one more thing to their add to their to-do list. So, you know, I really take it case by case. So I usually know that within the first 20 minutes of meeting somebody, I can talk about, you know, when you've done something for a long time, like I have, you can really get to know people pretty quickly on their learning styles and what's going to be the best approach for them. So it's really a lot about individualizing things to make them meet, you know, to make it meet their needs.
Yeah.
You know,
so there's a lot of trends out there to mm-hmm. your point of what maybe your friend is doing or you mm-hmm. saw on the internet, you know, maybe don't just jump into that. What are you, as far as the trends go, you mm-hmm. know, we have the keto diet, which it seems to be a really big deal. Mm-hmm. Seems like people are still really into paleo. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you get into these variations of like vegan and this and that and the other. Mm-hmm. What do you think about all of these trends and how it works for people mm-hmm. or doesn't work?
Yeah. Well, I think something works for everyone. Yeah. And so what you have to do is figure out what that something is. And the other thing is that what worked for you 2 years ago may not work for you now. And so this comes back to really paying attention to your body. But I'm a big fan of what I call the ish diets.
Oh, I love ish.
And of course I made that up, but it's basically where you use a little bit of a lot of different things to determine what might work the best for you. So paleo-ish, keto-ish, vegan-ish, you know, you mm-hmm. might have some vegan days. You might have, you know, some vegan meals here and there. But I think if someone comes in to me and they say, you know, I've been like with my clients, I get a very educated population, generally speaking. So they've tried a lot of things before they get here. And so if they have been paleo for the past year and they're still struggling with A, B, C, and D, you know, autoimmune disease or hormone imbalances or gut issues, I'm not going to push that. I'm going to actually try to change it and switch things around. I recently had a guy that came to me with a lot of psychological issues, severe depression. And the outcome really of what I sent him away with was to significantly increase his carbohydrates, which you wouldn't have expected, you know, from coming to a nutritionist, you would think that they're going to pull, you know, carbs back on you.
Yeah.
But in his case, I think he was over restricting his carbohydrates and he's not able to make the serotonin that he needs. And that's part of what's feeding into some of his psychological imbalances.
Wow.
So, you know, you don't know that until you talk. You don't know that until you dig. And so that's what I really learned is trying to help dig around and figure out what they're doing now and have been for a while. And how is that working for you?
Yeah.
And then make the changes from there.
So there's no one size fits all. Mm-hmm. Everybody right. is different. Mm-hmm. Now, do you subscribe to this whole notion of testing to figure out what's going on before you go down that road, or what's your process like?
I do a fair amount of testing here. I think that I love data and I'm a very science-based person, but I also think there's some great modalities out there that wouldn't necessarily be considered as science-based. Like some muscle testing can really be helpful and it's a quick in the moment, you know, get some data right then and there.
Yeah.
But I love the scientific data that comes from your body, your blood, your stool, your saliva, wherever that may be. So I do a fair amount of testing here. I probably do a lot of GI stool panels to identify where some gut imbalances would be. I probably do those the most, I should say.
Do most people, because obviously the gut is now my new job for the next, for the next year.
Yeah.
And like personally, it's like, Lord, I got to deal with my own gut. Does everybody have gut issues? like yes. to some degree. Yes. I mean, is anyone free of freaking gut issues?
I would say no. I would say that, and the reason my opinion is of that is because this toxic world we live in, the toxic burden is so much higher than it used to be. Mm. The stress and the level of performance that we have to accomplish in a typical day, especially for women, is so much higher than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And I think our systems are just not accustomed to that. You know, the way that we're always connected, the way that we're multitasking nonstop. And I think the one of the outcomes has been a really chronic gut assault. You know, I mean, I think mm-hmm. you don't realize that, you know, when you're eating foods that are not organic, which lots of people do, and lots of people have to because they can't right. afford the other right. option, you're getting microdoses of antibiotics your whole mm. life. And so you're clearing out gut bacteria or imbalancing gut bacteria as you just progress through life, even if you're eating healthy food sometimes. So there's always people, I've never met a person that couldn't use some gut support, even if they don't have GI symptoms.
Okay.
And that might mean that there it's manifesting in different ways for them. You know, I had a girl in, a few weeks ago, you know, a high school girl who just is struggling with ADD, no GI symptoms at all. But when you look at the big picture, it's like, we got to work on the gut to get those mm-hmm. neurotransmitters produced, to get that communication in the microbiome going the way it should be. I mean, there's so many other benefits of a healthy microbiome than just, you know, regular pooping and yeah. not having bloating. You know, I mean, there's yeah. so many yeah. other benefits.
So talk about that, if you don't mind, about the neurotransmitters that are in the gut, like mm-hmm. neurotransmitters, like as in what is in our brain.
Right. Except for most of your serotonin is actually made in the gut.
Shut your mouth.
Right. So 80-90% of it is made in the small intestine rather than the brain.
Why is this just now? Like, I mean, serotonin, they were talking about serotonin, like in psychology class, like it is, you know, like totally like our heads are not attached to our body and right. has nothing to do with anything else. Like, okay. Not why, because we could go down the rabbit hole, but like right. crazy. Okay. Most of your neurotransmitters are created in your gut.
Well, serotonin specifically.
Okay.
So, and that's serotonin is one of your, you know, feel good, happy, calming neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
So, that's the one that's made primarily in the gut. And certainly there's others as well, but that one is really, whenever you see mood disorders, I always think we got to work on the gut. We got to support the gut. We got to get that microbiome optimized so that that patient can have optimized brain function. I've had many patients who have, you know, more emotional or psychological responses to food intolerances than they do GI responses.
Wow.
And I remember when I'll never forget the first person that I really made that connection with. It was close to 10 years ago now, but she was deeply, deeply depressed when she ate any kind of gluten cross-contamination. Even she wasn't purposely eating gluten because she felt so bad, but it was so profound. I thought to myself, wow, like I have never seen someone so significantly mood wise affected by a food.
And was she doing a food journal so she could like report back on?
Yeah. So okay. she was one of those people that really liked to do that and thrived on it. But with her, the interesting thing was the sensitivity level was so high, the cross-contamination would get her as bad.
Wow.
Not quite as badly, but she really didn't eat.
But she wasn't celiac.
No, okay. She was not.
Wow.
And, you know, I've seen, this is part of why we see, you know, that we talk so much about that gut brain connection.
Yes.
There is so much that the microbiome is responsible for as far as messaging to the brain.
Wow.
So I think that that's a huge part. That's why when I work with people who have, you know, attention issues or focus issues or memory issues or mood issues, we look at the gut. You know, you think you're looking at, you know, the brain, and certainly that's part of it, but the messaging between the gut and brain is a bigger part.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so powerful.
Yeah. It's amazing. I know.
So what you're able to do for people now, so you probably started discovering this around 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure it's been being talked, you know, people have been talking about it for a while, but it's like, this is what people are really talking about now. How many people you're going to be able to help just with this information.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the mental
Yeah.
piece is
yeah.
like, yeah, you want to feel good in your body, but like if you can walk around and feeling happier mm-hmm. and more
balanced
mm-hmm. and connected to yourself, mm-hmm. that is a game changer.
It is.
Wow.
And the anxiety piece too, you know, I often share this with my patients and because I've personally dealt with some really severe anxiety issues in my life. And blood sugar is such a huge connection to that too.
Wow.
Right. When you feel anxious, you feel, you know, shaky, nauseous, headachy, you know, maybe you're having frequent bowel movements, maybe your stomach is hurting or feeling nauseous. Those are also all symptoms of, you know, blood sugar imbalance as well. And so what you eat and the timing at which you eat those things can play a huge role in stabilizing your blood
wow.
sugar, which then stabilizes your mood, right?
So how do you figure out the whole timing piece?
Well, for a lot of people, so for women especially, who have weak adrenals, which is the stem of my personal anxiety issues that I've, you know, really got well managed now, but was a huge issue for me for multiple years. When you have weak adrenals, your blood sugar is very fragile, meaning you can't really handle a long stretch of time in between, and you often can't handle a significant amount of refined carbohydrates at any specific time because it will spike and crash you very
quickly. So refined as far as like sugar or just, even like is a potato a refined?
No, it's okay. As long as, like a potato chip would be. So
okay.
As long as it's not processed.
Something out of its original form.
Right. And
okay.
You know, the skin of the potato would stabilize you more than the flesh because it's got the fiber, which stabilizes
okay.
the blood sugar. So you have to kind of take that into account too, but combining foods the right way. And then generally I would start people, I've had women who can't go more than an hour and a half without eating unless they, without triggering those symptoms.
Mm.
And in those cases, the goal is to stretch out farther and farther so that they can go 3, 4, 5 hours between their meals and feel okay.
Okay.
And that's a lot about your metabolism, how much, you know, how quickly you process and utilize your nutrients. But I think if you eat the right combination that for your body, because you and I sitting here, similar ages, similar sizes, you're not, we would have very, we potentially could have
I'm
very
so glad
different.
I'm as skinny as you. God, newsflash. Thanks.
But I mean, we could have very different
right.
needs as far
right.
as our carbohydrate tolerance, how much protein we need and thrive on, and how much fat we need and thrive on. So you really have to find that balance for your body. And I talk to women all the time about carbohydrate tolerance. You know, what is it that your body can tolerate? And there's a higher, an upper limit and a lower limit. Same thing. You don't want to, especially when you have fragile blood sugar, you can't go so, some women cannot go paleo because it's too low carb for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or keto is too low carb for them. They have to have a balance of some carbohydrates mixed in there, especially at nighttime. They need to have that, you know, sweet potato at dinner to stabilize the blood sugar overnight.
Okay.
So it doesn't wake them up, that you'll wake up if your
wow.
blood sugar is really fragile at night.
So if for everyone on the planet, because they're all listening to this,
mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, all the people. So for people who don't have a nutritionist and potentially are not going to go see somebody,
mm-hmm.
how could they navigate this journey without someone who actually knows what they're talking about?
You know, some people can, some people can't. I think, you know, a study that I recently talked about in a class I did said that 7 out of 10 Americans reported being confused about what to eat. And the majority
wow.
of people, I know, it's
that's
kind
a
of
lot.
Sad, 70% of people, the majority of those people were turning to friends or family or work colleagues for their information. So it's like, well, what do you do? You know, I've got this issue. I've got that issue. What have you done? Oh, I've tried this. I've tried that, which is great. And sometimes you'll get some good information and that could be beneficial, but you're often flying by the seat of your pants. So I think what you start with is you look at what you've been doing and you see how you feel. And if things aren't working for you, you got to make some changes.
Yeah.
And I have had people convert, if you will, from, you know, 25 years of vegetarianism. I had a woman who shifted from being vegan from her entire life. I think she was late 40s when I was working with her, because I really try not to pressure my patients into any specific diet because I don't believe that that's necessary in the beginning. But if they're really morally attached to a certain eating plan, then I let them continue that, but we modify it so they're maximizing their nutrients, maybe they're not doing it as ideally as they could be. And if they're still not getting the benefit, then I say, listen, we might want to think about making some adjustments.
Yeah. And I think it's hard for people who haven't eaten meat to make that shift over.
It's really hard. Yeah. I've seen patients in tears over it, and it's not me forcing them. It's like, I know I want to do this, but I'm really nervous, you know?
Yeah.
And I have them start, like one woman I had, she's been a vegetarian her whole life. She's in her 40s and she is just eating chicken about 2 ounces once a day. And when I saw her the second time, she said to me, I think I'm ready to do this. You know, it was all her, because I really don't push patients, although I'll offer them, you know, gentle suggestions, because sometimes there's a better way for your body.
Yeah.
And she really had kind of maximized the other approaches and wasn't feeling the energy that I thought she should be feeling. And so she said, I really do feel better when I eat it. I'm just really struggling with that moral piece.
Right.
And so I respect that, you know, and you have to respect everyone's position where they come from. And so, you know, I'm giving her some digestive enzymes when she eats it, because she's been a vegetarian since she was 6.
Wow.
And so a lifetime of not, you know, processing all those proteins.
Yes.
You can downregulate some of the juices, digestive juices you need. So, no, it's all individualized is what it comes down to. I mean, there just is no one size fits all. That is why I can do what I do day after day after day and see 30 patients in a week.
That's
because
nice.
If it was all one size fits all, I would be jumping out the window by Friday. It'd be so boring.
Well, and you know, it is what it is. No judgment, of course, as I get ready to say that the institution has people like, if you get this, then, you know, and I'm a, no offense to dietitians, but sometimes if you're a part of the institution, they are they're prescribing like one size fits all to every cancer patient or every woman who has, you know, something going on with her blood sugar or whatever. Sure. And it's like, that doesn't necessarily work. Like when my uncle had pancreatic cancer, he should not be drinking Ensure.
No.
I am so positive of that. And it was like disturbing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, while you're going through chemo, you shouldn't eat fresh fruits and vegetables. What?
Oh,
like, what do you propose that he eats? And God rest his soul, because he's no longer with us.
Right.
That didn't help him. I'm not saying it killed him. I'm just saying that was like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So we have to have this real paradigm shift. And the beautiful thing is it appears that systems and larger institutions are looking at different ways as we evolve. So that's great. But like that stuff.
Some of the advice out there from mainstream sources is nothing short of backwards. I mean, it really is. It's confusing to understand how nutrients that come from whole foods that came off of a tree or a plant or a bush could be a negative response, unless of course there's an interaction,
right?
You know, your leafy greens with a Coumadin, like blood thinning thing or something. But I think that's the foundation of our food should be real, clean, whole food.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe if we had started out or stayed that way, many patients wouldn't be in the dire straits they are with their health, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's, so it is unfortunate because I think people get confused, you know, and they hear a lot of different things from, you know, I do so much GI work and gut work that I see a lot of patients who've come from a gastroenterologist. And, you know, certainly this is not all of them, but there are certainly ones that are offering information that will align with the mindset that this has nothing to do with your food.
Right.
And patients are very confused by that. How can it be that when I eat and I have these terrible GI symptoms, an hour later, my food is not triggering that?
Right.
It's like, oh, no, this is just, you know, so it's unfortunate because of course it has to do with your food.
Right.
You know, you put the wrong kind of gas in your car, you're going to have a problem too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just really getting people back to some of the basics, but we know so much more now about the gut, the microbiome, the autoimmune connection to that, you know, autoimmune disease is at an all-time high, mostly women, stacking these autoimmune diseases, getting 1, 2, 3, 4 of them in their lifetime. So it's all so connected.
So if I deal with my gut, which of course I already feel like I have, but apparently I need to continue the journey. If I deal with my gut, that can help to reverse my autoimmune.
Yes, absolutely.
Amen.
There's tons of science to prove that. I think that it's about figuring out what is going on in your gut, because taking a probiotic often is not dealing with the gut. You know, you might need to do a little bit of investigating, where you mentioned some of the testing and digging around a little bit to find out what exactly needs to be cleared from the gut.
Yeah.
What exactly needs to be brought back into the gut? I think that's one of the bigger things is, you know, we're used to, and I've been guilty of this before myself, of, you know, in an effort to try and get results and help patients feel better, you go into kind of, you know, kill mode, where you're going in and killing off things that shouldn't be there. And that certainly sometimes needs to happen. But oftentimes we just have to go into rebuild mode and just support and nourish and heal with food and nutrients. You know, there's so many foods to, you know, this morning when I had my very unusual breakfast that I will admit, which of my homemade coleslaw, which I make with, you know, just, I don't use any mayonnaise. I use like a, vinaigrette little mixture that I make, and my cold roasted potatoes from last night, I'm thinking, ooh, I got all this glutamine and resistant starch in my potatoes. And I'm laughing at myself as I stand in my kitchen by myself eating it, because I'm thinking, this is how people should be thinking. When I look at my food, what am I getting out of this?
Right, right.
You know, I'm looking at this food and thinking, this is not just my breakfast / lunch because it was mid-morning. This is really my gut healing food for the day.
I love that.
At least part of it, you know, because cabbage is amazing for glutamine, not only your hormone, in addition to your hormones, but it's also glutamine for gut healing. And the resistant starch in the potatoes is a prebiotic. It's going to feed the good bacteria.
I love that.
So there are foods that really can be therapeutic. You got to eat them on the regular though. You can't just have them every couple of weeks and expect them to do anything.
So you bring up a good point about the probiotic, the probiotic conundrum. So if I'm having gut issues, my gut might not even recognize the probiotic because maybe I can't even break this thing down or absorb it. So, you know, what's the deal with the probiotics? Like, what's your two minute stance on the probiotic?
Yeah, the probiotics, I think, even I've learned, I've changed my stance a little bit on them. I mean, I think there's a time and place for them. I use them all the time. I'm actually more for the spore-based probiotics, which are really have a little bit of a different function in the gut. The transient probiotics, which is the ones that, you know, you go to Whole Foods and there's the whole wall of probiotics there. Those are just different strains of bacteria that are going to get introduced into your gut. And when you don't take them, in theory, if those strains are not colonized and growing on their own in your gut, they'll be gone. So for example, you take a Lactobacillus acidophilus, which is one strain. You consume that probiotic and it's there in your gut. But when you stop consuming it, if you are low on Lactobacillus, which when you do your GI testing, you will see, you know, your different strains. And if you're low on any of them, you would need to take that probiotic, which is, you know, you could take that probiotic, I should say. But really what you want to do is make your body grow and colonize that on its own. So I use a lot of prebiotic support for that. I use spore-based probiotic, which is a little more of a fertilizer for the soil.
Oh, cool.
And I certainly use, I mean, if you look behind you, I have supplements here, and I certainly use probiotics that are transient as well, because if they're not there, they can really help symptomatically to keep things going. But they're not as good at colonizing the gut and helping you grow your own as prebiotics, resistant starch, which is food-based, and spore-based probiotics.
Wow.
Yeah. So I use a lot of different things. I use 5 or 6 different probiotic, you know, and I'm doing air quotes for probiotics because it's the category of, but food also, you know, fermented foods, resistant starches would be like the banana flour, the cold rice or cold potatoes. These are food for your bacteria. And so you have to feed the garden in addition to just putting the plant in the soil. You have to do both. And I think that's where a lot of times we're missing. I do a prebiotic powder for a lot of my patients. In addition, you know, fiber is the best prebiotic out there. It's basically your vegetables, your leafy greens, you know? And so many people are on low carb diets, which means, or low grain or no grain, which means you are losing out on some of those prebiotic sources.
Yes.
Now, if grains don't work for you, that's a perfectly appropriate diet. In other words, you eat grains, you feel badly, you shouldn't be eating them until at least. But my goal is to get you to be able to eat some of those grains and feel okay.
Yeah.
Some patients can never get there. Some autoimmune diseases, we wouldn't want to do that. I mean, there's, you know, again, different approaches, but if they're missing that, you want to plug it in somewhere else.
I love that.
Yeah.
So before we wrap, because I could talk to you all day and every day about this. It's like fascinating. Like, I want to know about the potatoes. I want to talk more about the scores. So we will talk about more. We'll talk more about that at a different time. But sure. I would love just your take on intermittent fasting, that along with gut health, that seems to be like this other trend buzzword. What is intermittent fasting? Should we be doing it? Who should be doing it? Why do we do it or don't?
Yeah. So intermittent fasting is not a diet, but it's basically a timing of eating. You know, it's a schedule essentially. So there's a lot of different variations on it. There's cycling through where you can do multiple days of it. But basically what you do is you have a time, it's time restricted eating. So you have a window of time which you consume all your calories. And then the rest of the time of the 24 hours, you're fasting. And so the most common is 16-8, where you'd be fasting 16 hours, you'd eat 8 hours a day. And that basically for most people, it delays their breakfast back to 10, 11, 12 o'clock, depending on when they eat their dinner. So basically when you eat your, you wake up in the morning at 7 and you don't eat till 10:30.
But you can do like your hot water, your coffee, or no?
Sure. You can do hot water. You can do coffee. You can put like MCT oil in the coffee. You can
just try to fuel.
To get you a little fuel. Yeah. And for a lot of people that really helps, especially if they're exercising. I do sometimes have people do collagen also in their coffee or in their tea in the morning, because that gives them a little fuel. But you have to be careful, because again, if you push that intermittent fasting and you feel badly and you're a woman with weak adrenals who can barely go 3 hours without eating, and now you try to go from 6:30 p.m. to 10:30 a.m., you could really put yourself into a state of crisis. So you have to listen to your body.
Yes.
And if it feels badly, you ease your way into it. So I like it for a few reasons. It definitely helps with gut rest, relating back to the gut thing you asked about. You're only eating 8 hours of the day. So you're not, you know, people who eat every 2 hours all day long, their guts are constantly in work, at work. Mm-hmm. And that can be difficult on a gut that's already compromised. Mm. So I like gut rest, and I like that chunk of time that you get a break from eating, even if it's 6:30 p.m. to, you know, I try to tell all my patients, 12 hours without food. One of the things that I've seen over the years of coming from a little more of a conventional, you know, because I am a registered dietitian who is trained very conventionally, and I've been doing integrative and functional nutrition for, you know, 14 years now, is, you know, that every 2 to 3 hours eating is not necessary for most people. Mm-hmm. There are people who are, you know, kind of stabilizing their adrenals and working through, and they might need that for the interim. But most of us should be able to go 3 to 5 hours in between your meals and your snacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you eat dinner at 6:30 and go to bed at 10, you don't need to eat again.
No.
And it's sometimes shocking how much people consume calorically and both non-nutritively between the hours of 6 p.m. and 10 p.m.
I don't get it. I mean,
it's amazing.
My husband, God bless him, he did this interesting diet. And it would have him eat a snack. So it was a calorie-restricted diet. Mm-hmm. He had snacks throughout the day, and then he could eat dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So like 4 snacks, dinner, and then it would have him do a snack before bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so like for me, like I cannot eat before I go to bed. Like it puts weight on my body. It's like, it just does not work for me. And so my mindset is, I've eaten dinner. Why do, like, what else do I need to consume? And I think people eat at night just because they're bored or they're sitting in front of the TV.
99% of the time it's habitual. And it's also
comforting.
It's also emotional, exactly. Because that's the only time of day they are down. And most of the time what they're doing while they're eating is watching TV or they're on their computer. They're doing something a little more mindless.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is the nature of our society. It's like this go, go, go. And you get this one little window where you've got some chill time and you associate it with comfort food, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I try to help people kind of break apart is the nighttime eating. But if you do the intermittent fasting and you're going to commit to 2 weeks of following that to trial and see how it goes for you, nighttime eating is out. So you get to see one, you know, how does it make me feel in the morning? How does it make me sleep? How does it make my, you know, what does it do to my weight, you know, my blood sugar, all those things. But I really like the gut rest component. It's very stabilizing for the blood sugar for most people. It can help increase metabolism. It helps regulate some of the fat storage hormones like ghrelin and leptin and insulin, which are all storage, you know, fat regulating hormones, hunger stabilizing hormones. So I think there's a lot of benefits to it. And I generally, that is one thing that I recommend very, very commonly is try to go at least 12 hours. And I think even those women that I was mentioning with like the fragile adrenals, they usually can do it, you know, dinner and then they eat in the morning, you know, it's not.
And I love that we have given it a name, intermittent fasting. That's called you eat dinner and
then you eat breakfast.
Yeah. And like, I know it's just hilarious, but it's like, I think, you know, food is such a crazy relationship that we all have. And so, like, we all have to sustain ourselves. And and I've been told by several healers that I've lost my mind and like, I'm making myself crazy with this whole food thing, because that's my business and I am obsessed with it. And, and like, so, and I don't know if I'm so rigid, but like, I've just gotten so like, well, this is going to do this and this is going to do that. And it's like, I need to relax because I'm giving myself anxiety. Before I've even put anything in there, and talk about adrenal issues, because you're, well, because I'm stressing myself out.
You know, if you think about how your food is prepared and the love that goes into a really good meal, there is definitely some energy that comes from that that can nourish you in addition to the nutrients. Yeah. I think that's the same thing goes for when we stress about what we eat before we eat it.
Yes.
And I have my patients do this all the time. It seems to be mostly women that struggle with this, but where they're really afraid to add things back in. You know, they've finally gotten some of their symptoms under control. I have a lot of patients who are really afraid of food. You know, food has become more of the enemy.
Yes.
Because it's made them sick for a long time. And they don't know what has made them sick. Yes. So I think that's part of empowering them to understand, you know, when they get, oh, this food actually didn't make me sick. I thought it was all grains, but I can actually eat some quinoa and I'm okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm not so afraid of that anymore. And then they kind of, so I always tell my patients, I'm like, whatever it is that means, you know, whatever you want to do, that's going to mean something to you. You want to pray over your food. You want to, you know, you want to say some kind blessing over it. You want whatever it is. Like, I'm not a religious person, but you want to do anything to your food before you eat it. That's going to put good vibes into that food before you put it in your body, rather than, oh my God, I hope this doesn't make me sick.
Yeah.
And then that fear.
Yes. That is energy. And it's terrible. I had a healer tell me that. She said, you are fine. Bless your food. Know that everything you're putting in your body is feeding you nutritionally and that you are fine. And I was like, thank you for telling me that I had lost my darn mind.
Yeah. Well, and I think because we get so confused about, you know, there's so, like all the things you're asking me about, there's so many different angles you can take, and people get on the internet or talk to their friends and they get really overwhelmed and they don't know where to start. So, you know, having somebody to help you is obviously huge. That's not an option for everyone, but I also think having somebody that's not involved emotionally in your life is also a beneficial support too.
So you're more than a nutritionist, you're a therapist. I mean, really? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, I certainly don't claim to be one, but I behave as one very often because I'm supporting them through the emotional process of their diet and their lifestyle and all that with food. Yeah.
It is wild.
Yeah.
Well, it's all connected. This has been so enlightening.
Yeah, it's fun. Thank you.
Thank you for being with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to learn more and hear more. And if people want to find you, how would they do that?
I have a website, enlightenmentnutrition.com. And then all my information's on there. Email and my phone number and all that is on there. So anybody can reach out that way.
Wonderful. Reach out to Nicole. She knows what's up. She's going to hopefully be at the summit talking about gut health, which we're really excited about. And just thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This has been the Wonder Health Podcast. Join us next week. Thank you.